The second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And, of course, it was a fast, fast first hour with Mark Windows, windowsontheworld.net. Go there and check him out. Don't know if I got that out clearly before the break took us, but, man, we could have gone on for a couple of hours, I think, with the discussion we were having. Meanwhile, a change in gears because it's that time. The guy from downloadedcontent.com, the author of Then Came the Flood, and a friend of mine, Daniel Lewis Crumpton, who I did have to report to somebody earlier in the week, does get me in trouble from time to time, but but it's always fun. Daniel, how are you this evening?
Pretty good. Damn, just taking my medicine.
Oh, here we go. Well, you know, there's the auspicious start to the discussion. Who knows where it will go from here? You know what we haven't done, actually, though, Daniel, is a deeper discussion about some of your writing itself. We wind up getting into all these other areas, and we don't cover politics anymore, you and I, when we talk. We don't really discuss news items anymore because
I'm getting healthier, so.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, I have not extracted myself from all that, but I'm getting there. It's getting to be a strange world, man. It really is getting to be a strange world.
So you got some flack for the whole Anonymous deal?
I get flack every time you come on the show, one way or another. It seems like somebody gets pissed off, which is a good sign to me, and I like irritating people. So, loads of fun. you know I enjoy that. It's like, I am so glad that people are angry at some of the stuff that was said or whatever. You know, and I've gone and diversified this week a little bit. I mean, I brought on John Captain on Monday to talk about the murder of his girlfriend, who he claims was a mind control victim. And I'm actually going to bring him back on again this Monday, and talking about diverse. We're going to do another JFK 101 discussion on Thursday. Now, you know, that's an old standby for me. But on Friday, you know what I'm doing?
What's that?
I'm having Jordan Maxwell on. And Benjamin Fulford. So 1 hour of Fulford and 1 hour of Maxwell.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I still gotta do a thing with Jordan Maxwell, man. That'll be interesting. But yeah, dude, that whole Anonymous thing we did last time, that's great. Because at first, homeboy, the guy who's behind it, he did the knee-jerk offended thing. But then, much to his credit, he took it for what it was supposed to be, which is constructive criticism. And, like, very quickly you start seeing reforms happen with that particular group and, you know, them getting their ducks lined up. So we did some good in the world, man. We did some good.
No, look, you know, your rant, it wasn't we, it was you, because your rant about the subject, I mean, I was just cracking up because I knew exactly what you were talking about, and I'm sitting there going, man, I have tried to drop hints here, but they're not being heard. Mm-mm. And when you just did it and put it out as a little short out on YouTube and stuff,
yeah,
it was like, oh, that got noticed. First thing was funny to me is, oh, gee, thanks for the free publicity. So at first there was, you know, that, I'm going to take this the cool way reaction. Then obviously somebody got upset and started to actually think about it a little bit and changed what they were doing.
Yeah. Sherry, she was like, well, I hope they realize that you upped their ratings a little bit by mentioning them. I was like, yeah, it's always a silver lining, man.
Right. And Sherry's not with us tonight because she was busy with things and, not that she's been extracted from the show as of yet. Who knows? I haven't driven her crazy enough just yet. Working on it, though. She never knows what the hell she's walking into on Wednesdays usually. But we're doing this just you and me tonight. So I was wondering, what kind of an odd area could we go into? What is part of the unexpected but yet somewhat expected thing in your mind? Because I know you always have about 5-6 schizophrenic agendas going on. Mm-hmm. And I say that with all due respect, by the way.
I'm always spinning something. Yeah, dude.
You know, another way to put that, by the way, see, with all due respect, comes from a discussion we had about, you know, the Italian-American way of speaking. And with all due respect means you're about to get hit with a bomb of an insult. But there's another way to do it, too, and that is afterwards, you simply say, no offense. And if you hear, with all due respect, and then insert insult, and then, but no offense.
I think you're misqualifying or quantifying me with the wrong terminology. I mean, I feel where you're coming from, but I'm going to write an article about it. But it's something I came up with called CDID. Okay, so
CDID.
Yeah.
Okay.
Control.
Well, wait a minute. Well, first of all, was I misdiagnosing you as a schizophrenic?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
You were mislooking at or misperceiving the process of my mental patterns, which is schizophrenia. No, it's CDID. It's controlled dissociative identity disorder.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And obviously, the key word with me is it's controlled. Most people who have DID or multiple personalities are not aware that they have all these different personalities. But I'm a writer, so I have like a ton of voices in my head, but I'm aware of them. And so it's controlled dissociative identity disorder is basically my thought patterns and what I do. It's not
okay. Okay, but schizophrenia, remember, is not what a lot of people think it is. A lot of people think it's multiple personality disorder. That's not what I meant by it. I meant it in the very clinical sense, you know, where you have these, you know, cascading runs of thought and things like that that happen. And, I mean, we've heard that evidenced in some of your ranting styles. Occasionally you verbalize in a schizophrenic fashion. I don't mean split personality. Now, split personality are actually creating different mantles of identity within the mind is a different condition. But I like how you're putting this, though. Controlled – say that again. Controlled what?
Controlled dissociative identity disorder. And it's funny that you asked me about my writing. Because was there a particular writing? Is it the current serial novel I'm working on, or what piqued your interest there?
Well, you know, the serial novel, because you haven't mentioned it in a bit on the show. We talked about Jason Patrick, and we had to give time to that, that's for sure. And I do advise people, you know, go to Downloaded Content, and I think it's just / Jason Patrick Project, or is it JPP? What
it's
is the address?
It's / JPP, but here in the near future, I'm probably going to be moving all of that to the main site, just on a different page.
Okay. No problem. But the thing is, I do advise people to go look at that and keep up with what's going on with Jason. And that was an important topic. Also, other important topics, some of the socialization stuff that we talked about, and you talked about CanaSense. But at the end of the day, the thing that you're really out here to do, even though you are releasing tons of audio material right now, you're a writer.
Yeah.
And we could talk about the process, or we could talk about your current work, or we could talk about anything you want in that vein. I'm kind of wide open on this topic because I want to get in. I love getting into the head of the writer a bit. because here's the thing. I am one of the nastiest literary critics you will ever find. Okay, but sometimes I'm a little more forgiving when I understand the process better. And to tell you the truth, although I may have better insight than many of your readers to what your process is like, I don't think we've ever actually discussed it openly anywhere.
No, probably not. I don't know, man. Being a writer, yeah, that's what I'm here on earth to do, or be a storyteller in some form or fashion. So, like, whenever you see me doing radio, that's a form of storytelling. You know, doing those short little torrents, doing little short commentaries and articles. It's, you know, I've always said, Chuck, that the only woman that's ever really been faithful to me is the blank page. You know, whenever you have a blank page there, you know, I've been keeping journals since I was like 12 or so. And to me, a blank page has always been a place where you're not going to get judged, okay? The page is not going to tell you what you can write and what you can't write. It will record what you've written to look back on, you know, maybe years later, but it's never going to bash you over the head with it like other women, I guess.
I completely identify because I've been married to a microphone the majority of my life. One way or another, I was either a singer or I was a recording artist of sorts, or I have been a radio guy. So yeah. I'm married to the microphone, and she's pretty faithful. You know, as long as you take care of her, she doesn't break down too easy. And, you keep her well stocked. And exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you could take writing or speaking and put it to anybody's passion, but your passion, and for me it's writing, is where you can really, really just bleed out on your outlet, on your page. And, years ago I felt like there was a filter, like somebody grabbing my throat, and I'm not going to give all the details, but, when I would write certain controversial things or things that were just, everybody thinks certain things, but very few people say them, I would be warned, you don't need to publish that. Man, don't publish that. And I'd be like, oh, okay. But then I would go ahead and publish it at, the way that I wanted it. And that one line or that one idea that was supposedly controversial is what got me the most feedback. Because, writers are very, good writers. I'm not talking about jack writers. I'm not talking about writers who do it for money or for fame or anything like that. I'm talking about people who live and breathe to tell stories, to communicate, okay, in whatever fashion. But for me, it's a writer. We are very naked and open, and we really put ourselves out there because you personally know me, so you can, whenever you read my writing, you know that certain characters are based off of real people, okay? And I can be pretty scathing when I need to bring out somebody's negative qualities on the written page. What people don't realize is after they're done reading whatever it is that they've read from me, that I have to live in that world with those people. And it's not always easy.
Well, no, look, and I can identify with this problem because you know how many times I put out something on the radio now and I have now had to be confronted afterwards, again, not naming names, but I've had to be confronted afterwards with the smallest thing that I thought was just an excited utterance of honesty, an observation like, let's cut straight to the chase. That show that I did on the system of prostitution that I believe is in the socialization between men and women, that episode, which I did with Sherry, still stands as one of those things that keeps getting me all sorts of weird feedback. There are people that personalize it that I wasn't talking about at the time. Mm-hmm. There are people that hear themselves because they had some past experience with me and think that I was addressing them directly when I wasn't. I was addressing a general thing. Now, the funny part is that some of the people that I know heard the show, who I was talking about particularly, usually miss their cues.
Yeah.
But there's nothing I can do with what people read into it afterwards. Now, that's a fascinating thing because sometimes when I tell a story, and you've heard me tell stories on the air that you know are real, exact, like I'm just leaving the person's name out. That's the right. Only thing I left out, right?
Right.
It's like, we did this and this and this, and you're like, oh, I know when that happened. Yeah. But the thing is, somebody else will pick that up and think that I'm talking about something entirely differently. There's nothing I can do with what people decide to do with what I put out. You must experience the same thing writing.
Dude, all the time, man. Over the most bizarre stuff. And what I get is, oh, I know he's talking about me. I know that it's me, either in a good way, a bad way, or whatever. It can be taken. It depends on what I write, but, I'll have people who swear up and down that I was specifically writing to them and I was writing about them. When in all actuality, 9 times out of 10, they were like the furthest person from my mind, I get a lot of weird crap like that. I've also, you better be careful what you write because you might suffer lawsuits from people who get offended at what you write. And I'm like, really? Is anybody going to sue me over some, over reptilian shapeshifters and, you know, different dimensions and astral projection and stuff. And how are you going to take that to a court of law and say that was you in that book? You know what I mean? But, yeah, you get – it's strange, man. It's like having dual identities. I mean, even you know what I'm talking about. And I guess this is why I have such an affinity for superheroes is because, you know, when I'm behind the keyboard or behind the mic or whatever, but predominantly the keyboard, it's who I really am, where I can say anything that I want to say. And, you know, whenever I write on my website or in my novel and stuff or other stories, it's always under fiction, you know. But so it's always through a mask. It's always through a different identity as the author, you know.
Well, right. And again, you see, but here I go with the counterbalance. This is the artistic shuffle that people do when they actually utilize their personal experiences in their art.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I believe that what I do is an art form, and there's definitely a different energy level to what I do. I get a little psyched up. I'm happy. I have an audience. You know what I mean? I'm usually in a better mood when I go on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that because you've seen me literally, physically in the next room walk out where I can barely walk because I'm in so much pain.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't sound like that on the radio.
Right.
Right? Because I go into that zone. It's not as though I'm putting on an act. This isn't an act. This is who I am. This is how I speak. This is how I think. Right? But there's a little bit of a different energy put to it. So there's kind of a spin. There's the mask where, look, here is my presenter voice. Here is my, you know, I'm going to enunciate a bit differently on the air. I'm going to think a little more about how I'm pronouncing my words. I'm going to be careful about my sentences, maybe a little more. I don't curse on the air. You know, I curse off the air. Stuff like this, right? But there's still that filter. But it's my filter, right?
Yeah, but well, what's that? I think it came from the movie Unbreakable. When they said, okay, what's the difference between Spider-Man, Batman, and Superman? Well, Batman and Superman, they have to put on the costume to become Batman or Spider-Man, rather. The difference with Superman is he has to put on a costume to become Clark Kent, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you listen to other radio show hosts, like, for example, Your Passion, if I were to listen to other radio show hosts, I could pretty much, by the tone of their voice and energy, determine if the radio personality is the true identity or the alternative identity. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure when Alex Jones gets off the radio, he's not that way like in his everyday life. He has to put on a costume. All right, in order to become the radio show guy, right? But then you get to the point where is the real Chuck O'Chelly? Is the real Chuck O'Chelly when the mic is on or when the mic is off? And does that carry across the airwaves, right? And it's the same thing for, you know, whenever I'm writing. Who is the real Daniel? Is it what I'm reading on the screen or, you know, in my hand or hearing on the radio? Or is it whenever he turns all that stuff off? And I think that's how you can pinpoint authenticity. You know, honestly, in all actuality, the person I am when I'm not behind the keyboard, when I'm not producing some type of story, that is the mask that I wear to interact with, you know, the mere mortals. The real me, you know, the nuts and the bolts of me with no holds barred, nothing held back, is what you see on the page. You know, it's what you see on the page. The only time I really hold back on radio is out of etiquette. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Right.
But other than that, you know, and so I think, you know, especially in the internet age, man, there is so much opportunity to where if you have a passion and you really, really believe in it, you can become successful. You know, we live in that age where anything really is possible. You know, 6 degrees of separation and with social media – dude, if you got a book or you got a podcast or you got a radio show or you got an album, if you really believe in it, man, you could make that come to fruition to not survive this world anymore but live in this world. But it's really going to come down to authenticity. Authenticity. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely, and I agree with you entirely. I think that there is a huge difference between somebody who puts out an avatar – okay, to hide behind, and somebody who puts out an avatar because they've been hiding previous to that. I mean, at some point or other, we all put on a mask, right? You know, you have to control yourself in certain situations. You have to behave XYZ to accomplish XYZ. Okay. You know, but when it comes down to producing your art form, in a lot of ways, if you're actually that person and it's not an act, you're not trying to act as a writer, you're not trying to act as somebody who does what I do, you're not trying to act as a musician, but you're actually a musician, then, yeah, there's that big, huge difference between, you know, I'm wearing the mask when I'm doing it or I'm wearing the mask when I'm not doing it. And that is the key there. Mm-hmm. And I think that you and I have discussed other people, and we can see that the presentation that they're putting out is clearly without any sort of integrity to it. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I'm right or I'm wrong, entertaining or not, or anything else, there is an integrity to what I'm doing that I know and believe in. This is why I do this.
Right.
Okay. This isn't because I wanted to act as a guy who does this. Matter of fact, I didn't really want to do this to begin with. I mean, I kind of always had the idea of it, but I really wanted to be a rock star. That was my thing. And, but this just seemed to be the most logical, most comfortable, and best way for me to honestly be more myself than I feel as though I'm allowed to be in the day to day, which is, I think, what you do, even though, yes, you know, sometimes you're talking about interdimensional travel and individuals that shapeshift from one creature to another and how they're speaking, you know, across the ages, and that doesn't matter because that's really more you than what somebody runs into if you're standing out on your front lawn.
Let me tell you a personal story, but before I do that, I'll just say, because I know how you were, me and you've had, you know, we're friends and like real life people, and that was after we actually met online, you know, doing your radio show, so I know what led your path to doing the O'Chilly Effect, you know,
right.
So to me, what you're saying is I'm not saying it's not concrete with the listeners, but I'm saying it's more concrete with me because I know all the details, but, you know, with expression, okay, when you do limit yourself, and limit's a bad word, when you confine yourself to one avenue of expression, say being a musician, and you're no slouch when it comes to music, you know, you can get in there and do stuff with music that just, it's all Greek to me, I don't know how to do it, you know, but it's, you're exceptional as a musician, but your life's journey and your life story led you to this because doing the O'Chilly Effect, you can express in a wider swath of communicative avenues, you know, through talk radio, if that makes sense. But I'll tell you a personal story regarding authenticity and being a communicator, and for me, a writer, which is a huge responsibility. I mean, when you are a communicator, it is a huge responsibility. And when I was a teenager? No, I was actually a young adult, early 20s, and I was still writing avidly. I had a situation in my personal life that essentially, through means of manipulation, my ability to craft words in such a way ended up getting a girl to attempt suicide, right? Because of a letter that I wrote, right? Because of the putting together of words that once they hit the iris of her eyeballs, goes into her conscious mind, and in her subconscious mind, trigger a series of events to where this girl wanted to end her life, all right? Mm-hmm. And took her car, and, you know, I was not a good person at that moment. That was not my proudest moment to have done that. I didn't think it would go that far, but just a 2-page letter that I wrote, if I remember correctly, made this girl wrap her car around a telephone post. All right? And after that, atop some other personal issues, I completely stopped writing for more than a decade. I did not write anything. I stopped writing in my journals. I wrote no poetry, except on certain occasions like weddings or funerals, you know. I wrote no fiction, no commentary. I wrote absolutely nothing because I was absolutely horrified at the damage I had caused by means of a craft that I believe God put me here to perform. All right? So I say that because, you know, through a lot of soul searching in life and growing and realizing, oh, wait a second, what made that happen? You know, as a writer, what you're doing is a person is trusting you, if you're a good writer, to step inside their mind and paint a portrait, to paint a reality, to paint a commentary. They are suspending their critical thinking and belief for a while to allow you in their mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty heavy if you stop and think about it. Whenever anybody cracks open a book that's got my name on the cover or clicks on a post or an article or a chapter of a serial novel with my name, they are opening the front door of the house of their mind to me, whether they know it or not. And me maturing in this life and realizing you should first do no harm to people, you know.
Right.
Don't be a burglar. Don't go into people's homes and trash their stuff or steal. If you can do anything, then you need to go in and make the place better than how you found it, right?
Or leave a gift. Leave a gift that's actually a gift, one or the other, mm-hmm. right? If you can't improve the place, at least leave them a gift.
Yeah, something just to make it better. And when I started to think about my talents and skills, because there's a difference between talent and skill. You know, like Will Smith says, talent you're born with. Skill is when you take what you're born with and you beat on your craft every single day. That's skill. All right? Everybody's got talent. But when I started to think of it that way and having gone through a lifetime of hardship myself and coming through it and saying, you know, I can help other people, is when my fingers started to navigate back towards the keyboard. And so I'm very conscious when I write that people are going to hear me. And I'm just a normal human being like anybody else, man. You know what I'm saying? I pay bills. I have to eat. I put my pants on one leg at a time. I'm no, you know, I just happen to be a communicator and pretty good at what I do, right? When I started to think in terms of how to make the world a better place through that, when I sit down to write something, I'm always very conscious of that. And I'm always very mindful that it is a privilege for people who read my stuff to let me into their minds for a little bit, you know? Because you and I both personally know, and this translates from writing to filmmaking to doing radio, all right? Whenever somebody turns on the Ocelli effect and they trust you as a source and they're welcoming you into their head via whatever Fondle slab of choice or they're listening on a computer somewhere, they're going to develop a rapport with you and they're going to trust what you're saying. You know what I mean? And so this translates over to you to where you have to be mindful of what it is that you're presenting and how you present it to your listeners. But you and I both know there are cats out there who know the science of what me and you are discussing right now and do a lot of damage in people's personal lives. And,
right.
And I have seen with my own eyes the amount of damage that taking that responsibility of communicating to others, I've seen firsthand what it can do to a person. And it's the ugliest and most evil, sadistic stuff I've ever seen. And so I'm not going to get violent with anybody. I don't believe in that. But I do realize that if I could recognize that's a problem out there, it is incumbent upon me to keep balance in the universe and try to uplift people, inspire people, entertain people. Laughter is the most, you know, to me, if you can get somebody to laugh with words, then you're doing your work here on this planet, because that's what we need, man. Laughter is just so beautiful. It's, if you stop and think about it, when you're laughing uncontrollably, it's almost the same bodily functions as weeping uncontrollably, just in a higher vibration. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, and it's clarifying. It's cleansing in a way to do that, to actually sort of almost involuntarily get swept into that emotion, and both weeping and laughing actually have similar properties, although sometimes that weeping comes along with a very painful experience. And, you know, quite honestly, again, even humor is a lot of times rooted in some sort of pain.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not the pain that I want to focus on here. It's just the fact that that's where that trail starts, but it doesn't have to end there. You don't have to submit to the pain. You can express it, and by expressing it, this can actually purge, you know, the heavy remainders that come along with it, right?
But, you know, it's funny. I find profound moments in my life are often dismissed by other people. Just for example, in my early childhood, I saw a cousin who was eating some Cheerios at like 10:30 in the morning, and I said, "Aren't you late for work?" And they said, "Yeah, but when you're late, right?" Because what do most people do when they get up late? They rush and they hurry, right?
Right.
He was chilling out, eating some Cheerios and watching, you know, the news or whatever. He's like, "I'm already late. Why am I going to sit there and rush?" But anyway, those types of moments, like, he probably never thought about that for the rest of his life, but that has set a pattern in my life to, well, when you're late, you're late. You might as well not lose your crap over it. But one night, you were watching Family Guy or American Dad or something. And
some cartoon, yeah.
Some cartoon, and I think we were both done doing whatever we were doing. And so we both chilled out to watch some cartoons, and we were laughing our asses off. And you just, a passing phrase, you said, "Yeah," because whatever the joke was, it was like about racism or cancer or AIDS or something, and we were just dying laughing. And you said, "Yeah, the greatest comedy comes from the greatest of pains." You know, you know. But that one phrase right there, I had never thought about that before. And I go, "Holy crap, dude! Chuck is right. He just like laid a golden Buddha egg. All, the greatest comedy, if you really stop and think about it, is making light of stuff that people freak out about, you know, and it destroys their world. And then you got somebody who's like a stand-up comic like Dave Chappelle, which, by the way, his latest stand-up was magnificent, makes billions of dollars off of, you know, making you laugh about it. And so it's like, I say, look, whatever it is that you're going through in your life, one day you're going to laugh about it. So why don't you just do it right now? Get it out of the way. Laugh about it right now."
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, and I appreciate some comics that not a lot of people, you know, appreciate anymore, that have kind of been lost to history. A guy like Sam Kinison was amazing because he took that very like Bible Belt sounding preacher, you know, extreme cadence.
Yeah.
And applied it to the most disturbing material, the most taboo material he could possibly, you know, conjure. And what he would do is he would speak in that way. And, you know, everybody sees him as the screaming and yelling guy. But that screaming and yelling sounds like what you hear in some of those extreme Baptist churches. You know what I'm talking about, the smaller ones,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, if you're going to be a soldier for the Lord and so on and so forth like that. That's where he picked up that style. He came from a family of preachers.
Yeah.
But when he would take that and then apply it to, let's horrify everybody for a minute,
mm-hmm.
people would laugh out of their own personal discomfort from what he was describing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this news story, that it's one of the greatest bits of all time that he ever did. This news story where he talks about, you know, I read a story that there was a group of homosexual necrophiliacs going from funeral parlor to funeral parlor, offering the people that work there money to spend a couple of hours undisturbed with the freshest male corpse. Now, how many levels of taboo did you have to? And we're talking about the 1980s here when you did
right.
this.
Right.
This is not like today where, you know, you can find everything on the internet. This was like, what did he just say? and he would make a joke out of it that was, you know, at the end of it, it was, you know, let me see how I can tailor this for my show. He's laying face down on the stage and starts rocking back and forth, and he basically says, oh, so life keeps screwing you even after you're dead? It never ends.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds wholly ridiculously disturbing and crazy, but if you think about it, there probably wasn't a single person. I saw him do that live, by the way, in New York City. There wasn't a single person that was there that wasn't, like, made uncomfortable and kind of forced into laughing about how disturbing. I mean, first of all, necrophilia, homosexuality was a whole lot more taboo than it is now. Okay, throughout the country, the idea of necrophilia to begin with, the idea of trying to pay people off, thinking about, you know, your loved one's remains being disturbed. And, I mean, how many levels of bizarre, painful, twisted stuff did he throw together there to evoke that reaction? To me, that was a brilliant piece of performance art. And a lot of people are like, you're just a twisted guy, Chuck. But think about it objectively, right? How many levels do you have to get to? And, you know, thinking about a guy like Dave Chappelle, and I haven't seen the latest stand-up, although I'm dying to see it. Chappelle will turn around and speak to things like racism. And like, one of the best bits ever was that whole thing when he was on a bus, or I think it was a bus. Right. Oh, you know where I'm going.
The homeless guy who's wanting to shoot his homeless makers.
Yeah, the homeless guy turns around and starts masturbating in public, and it was like somebody got a little bit upset about him smoking a cigarette. So he goes through these multiple levels of people's political correctness and then takes it into another bizarre area where the guy is sitting there and basically pointing his baby maker at other people. And almost like holding them at gunpoint, except, you know, it's a fleshy gun as opposed to a metallic one. And meanwhile, somebody winds up getting splashed, and he says, you know what? If that lands on your head, you're going home for the day. You're not going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the most hysterical. And there's another example. A bunch of different levels of stuff to make people uncomfortable, right? You know, you got the homeless guy, you got the whole, you know, public nudity and this guy, you know, behaving in the way he does in public. So, you know, you got a mental kind of thing going on there. You got the idea about people getting all over him for smoking in a public place and all this stuff wrapped into one thing. And it comes at you and it becomes one of the most memorable things you heard.
Yeah,
because it's what it's to do. It challenges all sorts of aspects of comfort, right?
Yeah, well, Dave Chappelle's a different thing. Like, I like Bill Hicks, you know, I like George Carlin. I like comedians who are they make very strong political statements or sociological statements in their comedy, and they make it fun, you know, funny, to get us to laugh about it, to be more aware of it. But Dave Chappelle does it different, man. He's not a club you over the head with it, but whenever he's doing his stand up and he's about to be serious about what he's saying, you could tell his whole body language changes, and he, you know, after you're done laughing with the last punchline or the last joke, he comes in, he makes a statement, very not pushy, you know, and then maybe you could tell he's serious. He's really coming from the heart. While he's got these people in a certain state, he brings a message that he's trying to bring, and then gets back into his comedy routine. So he doesn't club you over the head like Bill Hicks or Kinison or Carlin. He does it real sly. But no, dude, you got to watch. It's a two episode stand up collection, because we all know what happened to Dave Chappelle after Chappelle's show ended. You know, there was all these rumors flying around that he, you know, went to Africa to go do cocaine and crack and all this other stuff. And Cat Williams, are you familiar with all that? Where came out and was like, dude, no, that ain't what it was. You know, Comedy Central was making like millions and millions of dollars, and he was only getting paid, you know, a certain amount. And whenever some type of a redo of the contract was brought up, they said, man, before you land back in Ohio at your farm, we'll have every newspaper and media outlet saying that you lost your mind and went to Africa to smoke crack. So for 10 right. years, Dave Chappelle's been kind of incognito, you know? Like, we're, you don't know. I mean, he has made public appearances, but for the most part, Dave Chappelle's been flying under the radar for 10 years since all that went down.
Yeah, he got knocked out of prominence because he didn't want to play ball with Viacom, basically. And I think it's Viacom that owns Comedy Central and MTV and all that, whichever big corporation owns those channels.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it was, is they wanted to keep him at a particular level, and he didn't want to play that way. And, yeah, they totally, you know, propagandized his behavior, like, oh, here's another star who's gone off the edge. He's smoking crack. He's losing his mind. He's running around screaming at people incoherently. And, you know, they did like a Martin Lawrence to him, except, well, they were successful eliminating Martin Lawrence from the scene pretty much.
So, like, whenever I watched that stand-up, I mean, could you imagine the amount of pressure that Dave Chappelle was probably under when he did that with Netflix? Because it's like, it's his first big thing in 10 years since all of that. You know, and even me to a degree, I knew all that stuff about Dave Chappelle was baloney. But even me to a degree was watching Dave Chappelle like, okay, is you know, is he still...
Is he all right?
Is everything all right?
Is he all right? Maybe he went through a transformation and they lied about it, and maybe something happened to him, and maybe he is a little messed up. And you see, because that's the damage of the media circus in a lot of cases, is no matter what happens in reality, if they decide to turn the propaganda machine on you, you know, there's no way to forever not have some little bit of you sort of stained by it.
Yeah.
You know, so Dave Chappelle's always going to be remembered as the guy who they said had all these breakdowns, and whether he did or didn't or what it is he actually chose, it'll always be talked about, and it'll always be part of the equation with him. And meanwhile, he's one of the more brilliant, despite the fact that I hated the movie Half-Baked, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought that movie was terrible.
He actually hated that movie.
Well, right, because, you know, but it was awful. You know, great concept, but it just was just so poorly executed. But a brilliant guy, another guy who, but like you said, more subtle when it comes to making those political statements. And everybody's got their style, right? I mean, I'm not the smooth-talking AM radio guy. Right? Who has to come out and tell you that we're going to play every single thing. I can't do that, man. I can't maintain that voice.
Yeah.
That's just not me. You know? So we're all going to have a little bit of a style. And his style is just a little more smooth, a little more subtle, and a little more incognito in general, I think Dave Chappelle's style is, and I appreciate him.
Yeah, so he's like the opposite of the black, angry... The angry black man stereotype, he's the opposite. He's just chill. You know, he even says it in his stand-up. He's like, look, here's what I believe. Whoever you really feel that you are on the inside, be that person. Whoever it is, whatever it is. You know, so he's not like preaching. He ain't trying to start a church, like I always say. But, yeah, if you guys haven't seen that Dave Chappelle stand-up, man, get on Netflix, because it was great. It was brilliant. It was funny as all get out. And he does exactly what we were talking about. He takes... You know, like the O.J. Simpson thing. That's still a hot button issue for people, and a racially divided topic. And he just brings it up, and you got white people, Chinese people, black people, all kinds of people under the sun laughing together in the same room. And so, stand up comedy, which is cool because I might actually be getting booked for some stand up gigs here in Georgia. I don't know if I've gotten to talk to you about that, but that might actually be on the horizon for me. But I see stand-up comedy as a brilliant art form. You know, it's a form of storytelling, you know. So,
Look, I'd volunteer to MC if they need one. I'm more than happy to do that kind of thing. I'm not a comedian, you know.
Actually, dude, the comedy club that I might be hitting is right down the street from you. Like, you walk to it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, the Whiskey River Comedy Club.
Well, you know, it sounds like the place to be for me. The Whiskey River Comedy Club. All right, hey, you know what? Maybe we'll be talking about that pretty soon. I hope you got a way to record it, because that would be something fun to play on the show too. You know, one way or another. Because here's the great part about it is, no matter how you do, it'll be great to play it on the show.
Yeah, I'll probably totally bomb. but
we'll if see. You totally bomb, that to me would be hysterically funny to play on the show. Because you ever listen to a good stand-up comedian just absolutely have his audience turn on him?
Yeah.
I mean, like some of the clips on YouTube, I mean, some now in the age of YouTube, but we used to get occasionally tapes of like, you know, there's a famous Bill Hicks show, even a guy who, you know, we all recognize as one of the geniuses in the field. There's a tape where he spends a good 40 minutes basically just having to argue with his audience because they have totally turned on him. I think he got about as far as, you know, he might have been in Dallas or something like that and you know, done the whole JFK thing. And I think it just totally turned the audience on him, which, again, is one of the most brilliant jokes ever. He's like, you know, I went to the JFK Assassination Museum in Dallas, and, you know, it's really, really realistic. They have a whole setup with the sixth-floor window and all that, and Oswald isn't there either, which is very funny. You know, and he also did the thing about, you know, you go into a smoke-filled room if you become elected president, and they pull down, you know, the room goes dark, right? And they pull down a screen and they go, any questions?
Yeah.
You know, funny stuff. I mean, I can't recreate Bill Hicks, but you know where I'm going. But he was sort of a little more of an aggressive comic. I wonder what your style is going to sound like. It's got to be something.
I have no idea. Hmm. I don't know. You know, I write funny stuff, so I've been told. How that will translate to doing it in front of a live audience, I have no clue, but that's something on the horizon. So,
well, you have learned that speaking is different than writing.
Oh yeah.
You know, look, I'm not a good writer. In my own estimation, I mean, I write some decent poetry, but that's because years and years of writing lyrics along with music. I think I can write some interesting poetic things or prose, but when it comes to like writing a story, I'm not good at it. I can tell you a story. Right. Because it's a different vibration, friends. It really is. And, you know, I know you hadn't really done much public speaking prior to coming on the shows with me a few years back. I mean, you had done some, you know, things where you got on a microphone in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
But a little different when you're sitting there and basically having the conversation with the wall and another voice that's in an earphone. It's a little different. Right. Then, you know, say giving a speech or anything, really having a telephone conversation. It's not the same thing. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that translates.
Yeah, we'll see.
And as I said, it would be even I don't know. I'm not rooting for you to bomb, but it would be so amazingly entertaining if the audience turned on you and shit.
That might actually like fire me up. I don't know.
Well, I know that'll mean that we're going to have five more gigs after that, but I'm just saying it would just be extremely funny if they just like hate your guts. It would be so great. But then again, I'm one of these guys, as I said at the beginning of the hour, I'm kind of amused by that. So,
yeah,
you know,
you
when you,
win. You can't win someday, especially, I don't know, you know, yesterday was Torrance Day. You know, those Torrance, whenever I do a podcast, to cater, which are usually about an hour and 45 minutes, to cater to the YouTube generation, which is 10 minutes or less attention span.
Right.
I take, you know, certain key points of interviews or shows or certain funny moments when I'm on the radio, and I cut them up and I put them out on YouTube as short little videos called torrents, right? And when you're making when you're producing that much stuff in a day, and you're taking cannabis, you come up with titles like on the fly. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you caught the stream of torrents yesterday, right? But I was going through and putting them out there, and some of the titles were Jesus was a rock star in the sack, just ask Mary Mags, you know?
Right, yeah.
One was head coverings for women because the gods like to sling a lot of sperm, you know? One was, what was it? Epic threesome fail, Adam and Eve and Lilith. Right. And so, right. You know, and they're like 5 minute videos. And of course the title is kind of funny and offensive and, you know, shocking, I guess, to certain people. But for the most part, I get great feedback. You know, people are like, oh, the title was hilarious. But then like today I go to check my messages and I offended somebody, you know, I think I'm pretty sure it was a Baptist that got offended, heavily offended.
But by the way, my favorite title from the Torrance was when where demons come from and why they are screwing with your food.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah. I thought that was a good one. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're just off the wall titles. But when you're pumping them out, like, you know, 6 or 7 in a day or whatever, you have to title them very quickly. So, you know, and I'm like, okay, this will catch people's attention. It's funny, and it's also relevant to whatever the hell I'm talking about on the show. But yeah, dude, you just sometimes you can't win with the title. But yeah, I got my ear chewed off by like a Baptist about they probably didn't even listen to the video at all. They just saw the title, you know. And I've had, quote, marketing salespeople come to me. What are you trying to do, man? You know, why are you titling it that, man? You're going to turn your audience off. Do you even want them to listen? And I stop and I think to myself and I say, well, the type of people who I want to hear me are actually going to go past a title. So, no, I don't want them to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If the title offends you and you're going to respond or come at me, bro, before you even know what the context of it is, I really don't want you listening to anything I say. And I really don't want you to read anything that I write because you're shallow, you know, and it is what it is. Your fear to look at opposing beliefs shows the invalidity of your beliefs. Uh-oh. Write that down, dudes. We got to copyright that, put on a T-shirt.
That's a pretty good one. That is definitely a good one. And here's the thing, you know, when it comes to people being offended, I always find it humorous because the fact is that very little should offend somebody about some words that are spoken or written. You know, it's one of the strangest things that I find. You know, people are so offended by, oh, well, this person used a phrase that I don't like, or they identified a group of people with a callous label, or, you know, they made a sweeping statement about something that I've identified with my particular identity in one way or another, whether it's religion, political group, sexuality, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're offended by those things. But then when you get them to understand that, you know, real people are dying because of words that were not meant to be commentary, that were not meant to be entertainment, that were not meant to be, you know, a report, but actually because there are individuals who on a 24-hour basis command others to commit murder, that command others to do vicious, inhumane things to their fellow human being. You show them evidence of that, and it goes by as if it's nothing. But they're going to get offended with a word. They're going to get offended with a label. They're going to get offended with a phrase that they've been taught is offensive.
Okay.
But actual bloodshed and actual suffering of their fellow human being?
Yeah.
Not so much.
On a different spectrum, you know, I've been doing the CannaSense thing, which is fantastic. I mean, it's fantastic. And I've been cutting up, like when I go on shows to talk about it, I'll cut up excerpts from those interviews and make them into small, like, public service announcements and get it out there on social media so people can hear about it. And I did one called Cannabis Heals the Mind, Body, and Soul. And I think in that short video I was talking about how it's good for your, you know, your spiritual growth, your emotional growth, your mental growth, all of it. And so I put that out there, and for the most part I'm getting likes and shares and right on, and you're doing God's work. And then I get one guy, you know, in all caps, no, it doesn't. It blocks you from God like all other drugs. And I'm like, really, dude? You need to smoke a joint.
Yeah, and isn't that the solution? When somebody's really totally offended at your support for the use of cannabis, isn't really the best thing to tell them, maybe you ought to partake just to calm down? Anyway, we're totally out of time. Daniel Lewis Crumpton in the second hour. Then Came the Flood is the name of his book. DownloadedContent.com. Go there and check out the ever-evolving world of Daniel Lewis Crumpton. And Mark Windows in the first hour, windowsontheworld.net, and also on YouTube. Anyway, guys, the Ocelli Effect is done for tonight. I'll be back tomorrow with Carmine Sabastano and Larry Hancock. And then on Friday, Jordan Maxwell and Benjamin Fulford. Have a good night, and please be well. Thank you.